Welcome to the Health and Self-Care Podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP from Somerset, and today I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, also a GP in Somerset, and with a special interest in mental health and dementia.
Oh, thank you. And today we're going to have a chat around all the things that are involved with feeling tired. So we've called this podcast, Why Am I Tired? And I think feeling tired is a very common presentation in general practice, isn't it, Peter?
Absolutely, yes. We often sort of call it TATT, don't we? Tired all the time. And it's incredibly common. Apparently, if you stop people in the street and ask them, do you feel abnormally tired? Two-thirds of people will say yes.
Gosh, that's a lot of people.
It is. And we see it all the time. And obviously, we're looking for the serious medical problems. But actually, that's quite a small minority. So which end should we dive into, Kate?
Well, I thought it might be quite helpful just to unpick, what do we mean by feeling tired? Because I think there's a variety of symptoms that people can have that they would describe as feeling tired, but they can present a variety of different problems. I remember once having a patient who came in quite regularly complaining of feeling tired, and actually it turned out that they had muscle weakness and they had a muscular problem. So sometimes it's worth starting right at the beginning and finding out, what do we mean by tired?
Yes, absolutely. And the same thing happens in depression in older people. They'll often describe tiredness rather than feeling unhappy or depressed. So, I mean, generally, we know what we mean by feeling tired. But as you say, it can be very different. And one of the things I find helpful, I don't know if you do, is that if you wake up in the morning, you're feeling full of beans. But then when you start doing something, that's probably a physically caused tiredness. Whereas if you wake up and you've slept, but you still feel exhausted, then that probably means you're overloaded somewhere in your brain and there's a different set of causes. I don't know if that's a useful distinction.
I think that's quite a useful, loose way of looking at it, yes. And I think people have different attitudes to what they consider to be tired. I mean, I remember when I was doing my training many, many years ago, we worked incredibly long hours. I had four young children. We did our own out of hours and our on call. And I would say that tired was my default, but I would never have described myself as tired because that was just normal. And that's what we were all experiencing. And then I remember also another patient coming in who told me they were feeling very tired. And it turned out that their marathon run time had got longer. And so that's what they thought of as being tired. So I think we all have a very different baseline to start from, don't we?
We do. And I think it's probably reasonable to recognize that if we have busy lives, then feeling tired is not necessarily a sign of poor health or something terrible going on. It's just pretty much normal, isn't it?
It is. But then it's always important to exclude the physical causes for tiredness. So from your experience, Peter, what would you say are the most common physical causes for feeling tired?
Yep. And this is the great joy and stress of general practice, isn't it? That you see things incredibly common and then you have to look for the rare, serious things lying behind them. So let's just deal with those in order, shall we? So I guess anemia is probably the first thing you would think about. And that can be iron deficiency, B12 anemia. It can be because of chronic bleeding. It can be because the blood's not being produced properly. So all sorts of subtypes of anemia, but any sort of anemia will make you feel tired and usually give you other symptoms as well, like shortness of breath, maybe pain in the calves when you walk up the stairs, maybe a rapid heart rate, that sort of thing. Anything you want to add to that, Kate?
No, I think you've covered it quite well. And of course, anemia is quite easy to detect, really, isn't it? Because it's just a simple blood test. And your hemoglobin is measured, which is the amount of hemoglobin, which is in your blood, which is the chemical that holds onto oxygen, isn't it? And there's a normal level. And if it's too low, then you're described as being anemic. And then you look at the different causes of anemia. And as you say, by far the commonest cause is iron deficiency, particularly in people who might have a slightly erratic diet or in women who might have heavy periods, because of course women lose blood every month regularly. So it's worth checking that. And interestingly, I think also just iron deficiency without anemia can cause tiredness, can't it?
It can. Yes, absolutely. And that's quite a tricky thing. The next thing on my list, if somebody comes in with tiredness, would be thyroid. And that's another thing where you know, the blood test is what we use to make the diagnosis, but it's not quite that straightforward. But maybe worth covering that, because that would be number two on my list if somebody came in with tiredness and you're looking to exclude.
And I would agree. And there's both types of thyroid problem, isn't there? An overactive and an underactive. The overactive thyroid tends to make you sort of hyperactive and jittery. And people sometimes describe that as tired. And an underactive thyroid makes you very lethargic and slow, which people would describe as not tired.
Yes. And again, classically, overactive, you would get a bit of a tremor. You maybe lose weight. You feel hot and sweaty. Everything is going too fast. Whereas underactive, you get sluggish. You tend to get constipated. Often you get quite dry skin and things like this. So everything slows down again. But as you say, both can present as tiredness. So always worth checking.
Yes. And number three on my list would be diabetes. Would you agree?
Yes, agree. Yes. So we've got type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes tends to be a fairly rapid presentation, weight loss, thirst. It's definitely feeling very tired, but can happen very dramatically, especially in younger people. Type 2 diabetes, it tends to be more slow onset, often in older people, often if their weight is too high. And tiredness, a very common thing. And again, with the type 2 diabetes, as well as maybe feeling thirsty, which is classic, you might get visual symptoms. You might find that you're picking up infections and not able to fight them off. So again, both things easy to check with a blood test. Anything you'd want to add on that, Kate?
No, except that for diabetes in children in particular, they always say look for the four T's, isn't it? Tiredness, thirst, toilet. And for the moment, I can't remember what the fourth one is. but tiredness is very common in children when they present with diabetes.
Yes. And worth remembering, it can present very dramatically. People sort of going into coma and being really...
Yeah, over just a few days, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think those probably the top three and all ones that if somebody came in with tiredness, even if I thought it wasn't a physical symptom, I would want to check all three with a blood test, which you can do all in one go. Very simple. Rule it out. Make sure you're not missing something.
Great.
A few other less common physical causes, chronic kidney disease. That can give tiredness, can't it?
Yes, it can. Although quite often the chronic kidney disease is quite insidious, isn't it? So people may not realize they're feeling tired. But the more when you have an acute kidney injury on top of chronic kidney disease, they may feel more tired. And then we're getting the realms of complexity here, aren't we? But yes, kidneys, definitely.
Yes. So, and again, in the sense of knowing what to test for, we as GPs don't need to know those complexities. We just need to know that we tick the box and do a renal function and then take it from there. And then chronic infections. I mean, maybe something we'll come on to in the future, but I think increasingly we're realizing that a lot of infections, especially viral infections, don't just give this acute thing. And we've become more aware of that recently, but it can go on giving this long-term fatigue. So the classic would be glandular fever that gives really bad fatigue, doesn't it, for months?
Yeah. Well, there's this concept, isn't there, of chronic inflammation, which is associated with fatigue. And I think that's, as we do more research and we unpick it, I think that's going to be more and more significant. And that chronic inflammation has got lots of other long-term implications as well, hasn't it, for your health in general?
Absolutely. We could have a podcast just on that, I think, because it's a huge area. But certainly, you know, in the things I'm interested in, mental health and dementia, it seems to lie behind a lot of problems. And some people call it inflammaging.
Yes.
Idea that as we get older, we become these. Yeah, I think it's quite a nice phrase, isn't it?
I think it's a very nice phrase. And it stops. It allows you to look at it in a much wider context, doesn't it?
Yes.
Expression.
Absolutely.
So going back to our list, because we mustn't forget the common cause of tiredness, of course, the liver.
Yeah.
A variety of liver problems can make you feel tired. And that, again, they're fairly easily picked up with a blood test.
Definitely. And If it's a severe liver problem, you'll often notice that you're a bit jaundiced or your eyes go yellow or whatever. So there are these other things that might suggest that liver disease. And important to note that liver problems are not just alcohol related. There's this, a lot are obesity related, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Or diet related.
Diet related, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And then maybe we should mention heart disease, both. Not so much angina, though that can give tiredness, but also heart failure, which can give fatigue.
And heart failure can present both with fatigue and exercise intolerance, which I think is slightly different to fatigue, isn't it? It's not being able to physically do what you could do before.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
We're going to come on later to the fact that we're both experts by experience in different aspects of fatigue. And for me, it's long COVID, but mine actually presented with heart failure. And, as a GP, I should have been able to diagnose it, but I just found going up a hill, I got both more short of breath than I would have expected to, but also that the recovery took several hours rather than just a few minutes. So it felt different somehow, but I think had I not been medical, I wouldn't have taken myself off to the cardiologist and asked for a scan.
No. Well, good job you did.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, just worth bearing in mind. Yes.
We're going to come to the other big area, which is my area of expertise by experience, which is ME/CFS. But I think we're going to cover that a bit later on, aren't we?
Absolutely. Yes. So do you think we've covered the physical condition?
I think we have. And I think now we're moving on to that large mental health bucket, isn't there, of conditions, the most common of which, of course, is depression. Yeah. And the fatigue with depression is more about not feeling able to initiate doing things. So you wake up in the morning not wanting to do anything, and that makes you feel fatigued rather than wanting to do something, but then tiring very quickly. I think that's the easiest way to detect that. And depression, of course, comes with other very cardinal symptoms, early morning wakening, quite often change in appetite. You're the expert, Peter. Do the list.
No, absolutely. So, the textbook stuff, as you say, it's early morning waking. It's anhedonia, that lack of enjoyment in the sort of things that we would normally enjoy doing is probably the single most important thing. It's got to be going on for a reasonable length of time, a few weeks before you really start labeling it depression. And as well as the anhedonia, there's just that blackness is kind of the opposite of rose-tinted spectacles, where you just can't look at things in a good way. And it can be, it can be anything from that sort of very mild everyday feeling down that I think is, again, I would say a normal part of the human condition, to this absolutely devastating bipolar suicidal ideation, taking over your life, depression that is really one of the most devastating things that anyone can have.
Yes, I agree with that. And then sort of somewhere on the route towards that, of course, there's burnout and stress, which can lead to depression, but they are an item in their own right, aren't they, really? And we're seeing burnout more and more these days with people with unrealistic expectations of what people can achieve in a day, particularly in a lot of work-related stress at the moment. And this is an area I'm quite interested in because I have an interest in neurodiversity. And you see it a lot in neurodiverse individuals, particularly autistic people and people with ADHD, in that when they become overwhelmed after a period of time, they then burn out and switch off. And this is often diagnosed as depression, but actually it's a very different condition to depression.
Yes, yes. So how would you distinguish between the two in that situation, would you say, Kate?
I think depression quite often can be an illness in its own right, whereas autistic and ADHD individuals will have had a lifetime of difficulties coping in certain circumstances, and they just burn out. Sometimes, we're seeing a lot of this in children at the moment, trying to cope with the education system. and getting burnt out and just completely switching off and not engaging. We see a lot of anxious young people, and it's all linked to this being overwhelmed, too many expectations.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there's a good graph, isn't there, where you need a certain level of stimulation to function, and your response to that is that your own function goes up to a certain point, but then it drops off after a certain level. And is that the point where you'd say, call it burnout?
I would say that probably is burnout. I think it's sometimes important just to step back and remember that we are just a series of chemical reactions. Mm. And there comes a point where actually physically your body is not capable of doing that anymore. And I often see some quite high-powered individuals working in very stressful environments who go, well, I'm fine, you know, I'm strong enough, I can cope with that. Nobody's strong enough. Everyone has a point at which they're overwhelmed and can no longer cope. That level may be different for different individuals, and some people may be able to tolerate a lot more stress than others, but there is a point that everybody can break.
Yeah,
I think it's important to remember that.
And our editor, David, has put in our chat how current society makes us all a bit like people dealing with neurodiversity, and that it's everything is so busy. You're never off.
No,
there's always something pinging at you, isn't there?
Yes. And social media by 6 o'clock in the morning, you know that there's been a bomb dropped on Iran and something else has happened. This has happened. We're aware of so much more nowadays and not protected from it.
And we've dealt with stress in lots of our episodes with these conditions, haven't we? So maybe if people recognize that they are feeling burnt out and stressed, maybe we should refer them back to one of our other episodes on stress, because we've got lots of people coming in and giving very good ideas on how we can deal with stress. Yeah. But exercise in nature is probably the one theme that's coming through, isn't it?
Step back and don't overwhelm yourself. Yes. And now we're coming to an area that I'm particularly interested in, which is ME/CFS, which I think is a very poorly understood condition, which is not a mental health condition. It's actually a physical condition. The research is showing increasingly related to, we can't understand exactly what causes it, but probably was related to mitochondria and how they produce energy. And mitochondria are the little organelles in your cells and the whole of your body that produce the energy that allows your body to function. And I don't know if it's helpful, but if I tell you my story, up until 13 years ago, I was an incredibly active go-getting person. I've got 4 children. I work full time. I'm a GP. I did a lot of work outside general practice as well with appraisals and GP performance. So I was used to quite a high level of being able to produce energy. And I had a back problem, which was related to a benign growth that was in my spinal cord. So I had surgery for that. And of course, after the surgery, I was told 6 weeks recovery and you'll be fine. So being me, I thought, well, that's 3 weeks and I'll be back to normal. So I did lots of exercise and tried to get myself back to normal. And instead of improving, things just went downhill. And every time I did any physical exertion, I would develop neurological symptoms related to not being able to swallow, not being able to go to the toilet, brain fog, just not being able to think straight, and just absolutely, you know, bone deep exhaustion. Worse than anything I'd felt, even when my 4 children, because my children were the 7 years between my eldest and my youngest. You know, even when they were little, this exhaustion was more than that. But because at that point I knew very little about ME/CFS, and I just assumed it must be psychological, it must be me, and if I just got my act together, I'd be fine. I just pushed and pushed and pushed and got iller and iller and was unable to work. And after about a year of this, I decided I must be depressed. You know, that must be what's going on. Tried treatments for depression, no good whatsoever. And then, having been ill for such a long period of time, I did become depressed, and that was completely different illness.
Yeah.
That was the seeing no hope in the future, not being able to smile and anxiety. It was completely different. And I had some more treatment for that, and the depression recovered, but the physical illness didn't. And for me, the pathognomonic feature was this thing called post-exertional malaise. Mm. So as long as I remained as a baseline of activity, which at that point was very, very little. I could only go up the stairs once a day. I couldn't walk more than 200 meters. It was very, very limited. But if I stayed below that level, things would improve. As soon as I went over that level, all my symptoms, and that included the physical symptoms, would get much worse. And it took me a long time to unpick this and recognize what was happening. And so I started really vigorously pacing, because up until that moment, I'd been doing as much as I could and then stopping once I was exhausted. And there's a whole thing about pacing and using heart rate monitors to pace so that you don't exceed your energy threshold. And I went right back to doing virtually nothing for months on end. I even resorted to a wheelchair for a while just to be able to get out and do stuff because I couldn't get out of the house. And very, very slowly things started to improve. But it took 7 years from when I'd first been ill to being able to live, you know, a pretty much normal life. I still have limitations now, so I can't go for long walks. Physical exertion is my threshold, and I know when I've reached it, and then I have to stop. And I have to be in bed by 9 o'clock every night, otherwise it all comes back again.
And I feel slightly guilty as a member of the medical profession that's sort of colluded in. In looking down on ME, it's something we do, isn't it? If we don't understand it, we tend to blame the patient. So in the popular press, it was yuppie flu, and the treatments, the recommended treatments, were graded exercise and CBT, implying it's all psychological. What's your take on that?
It makes me very angry because it made me worse. Because there's a very large ME/CFS community out there on social media, and that's one of the joys of social media, is you can connect to people that you may never have met otherwise in life as it used to be. But they are very angry about the recommendation for graded exercise. They're very angry about CBT. There is so little research into the physical causes for ME/CFS. And there are people who died from this condition. There's a young lady in Exeter who died recently. She was only in her early 20s because people chose to believe, with the best intentions, that her problems were psychological. Yeah. And they weren't. They were physical.
And I wonder if part of the problem is that the presenting symptom of tiredness is something that can be triggered by so many different things. Yeah. So I saw a recent paper showing that I think it was parvovirus B19 titers are raised in a lot of people with ME. So that is an obvious physical viral trigger for it. And yet the symptoms are exactly the same as somebody who's got chronic fatigue ME from probably another course.
We were talking about glandular fever a while ago, weren't we? And a lot of people get a post-viral illness with glandular fever, which is actually, I would say, identical to ME/CFS. And I think probably once some research is done, it'll be found to be the same thing. And I think it's related to chronic physiological stress on the body. And the body sort of goes into self-defense mode and says, well, you know, there is a danger here. I'm going to switch everything off because you're overusing me. I think there is a link to burnout as well. I think they're all part of the same physiological mechanism. And I think we need to do a lot more research in that area.
Definitely. And I mentioned I've also got personal experience with the COVID. So I got COVID right at the beginning of the lockdown, way before we had injections and things like that. And clearly had extremely low oxygen levels and very nearly didn't pull through from that. But the fatigue went on, I now realize, for 2-3 years, it's still there. And like you, I'm somebody who's used to being able to work 12, 14 hours a day. I'm black belt in karate. I'm very physically active. And now I just find I can only do half an hour and then I have to sit down. And I think the only answer to that is just accepting, as you were saying, that we need to pace ourselves, listen to your body.
Yes. And I think that's very important because a lot of the messaging behind graded exercise and CBT isn't about pacing yourself. It's about pushing yourself. And I think that's the worst thing people can do.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure you've got lots of contacts. We'll try and put some notes on the show pages for people who want good information, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, I'm afraid, isn't there?
And I, you know, having been in the medical profession and having not understood ME/CFS until I got it, I completely understand where the experts are coming from. But I think they do need to listen to people with experience, because there's some very clear messaging that needs to be heard properly.
Absolutely. So should we pull back to the more general fatigue that isn't CFS, and maybe suggest some lifestyle changes that people can do, assuming that it's not CSF fatigue?
Yeah, I think lifestyle changes can help with CFS chronic fatigue. It's just trying to understand that that's not, you know, you're not going to suddenly cure yourself by doing the lifestyle change, but they can make things better. So I think, to me, one of the key things is sleep hygiene, getting a good night's sleep, and however that looks. And a lot of people, I mean, particularly with ME/CFS, but a lot of people describe feeling tired and wired. So they feel exhausted all day, but they can't get to sleep because their brains are wired. And there is a theory out there, this is related to dysautonomia, in that your vagal nerve isn't working properly.
Absolutely.
And we need to encourage our vagal nerve, which is usually done through meditation and just not overloading yourself with stuff. Having a healthy diet, low sugar, fresh fruit and vegetables, all the usual. Exercise as you feel comfortable. So if you feel like going for a walk, do go for a walk. If you don't feel like going for a walk, listen to your body and try and work out why.
Yes, absolutely. Be kind to ourselves. If people are interested, I remember a very good guest who was talking about sleep problems and how to overcome them without drugs and things like that. So I'd maybe point people back to a previous episode on sleep, if that's...
Yes.
And I don't know about you, I see a lot of people who, because they're tired, they use caffeine, whether drinking cups of coffee or the caffeine energy drinks now, or Pro Plus pills or whatever. And that's a bit of a trap, isn't it, to fall...
It is. Yes, because caffeine is a chemical that stimulates your body to do stuff, but it will only work if your body's got the actual energy to be able to do stuff. So, you know, if you've got a car which hasn't got any petrol in, it doesn't matter how much... Well, it hasn't got any diesel in, it doesn't matter how much of the blue agent you put in, it's not going to drive because you need more diesel in there. So yes, caffeine is not such a good plan.
No, absolutely. And the same applies, I guess, to drugs, and I'd include alcohol in this, that also sort of relax you and reduce anxiety, that again, they'll tend to make that fatigue worse, won't they?
Yes, it's a false, you may think you feel better, but it's a false, it's not real.
No, absolutely. It seems to me, doesn't it, that all the simple answers are... not actually help in the long run.
If all the simple answers worked, then we wouldn't be doing a whole podcast on fatigue, would we?
No, absolutely.
What do you think the role is in vitamins in fatigue? Ooh. So for somebody who's had all the blood tests and they're normal, is there a role for multivitamins or anything like that?
Personally, I'm not convinced. I've seen evidence that taking multivitamins actually reduces life expectancy. Maybe an argument for vitamin D in people who, either because of skin color or working indoors, don't get enough sunlight, or during the winter, maybe slightly low vitamin D levels cause tiredness. Obviously, some people with vitamin B deficiency get tiredness and memory problems. But again, that should be picked up on a blood test. But in terms of a general multivitamin, I'm not convinced the evidence is out there. What do you feel, Kate?
I'm inclined to agree with you. Although I think for a short course, multivitamins won't do any harm. And sometimes the placebo effect of feeling you're taking something to make things better might help you psychologically. But I don't think they actually make a difference to the course of your fatigue. Magnesium is quite popular, and I think there is something to be said for magnesium, because I think our diets are very low in magnesium. So unless you're eating organic food, Perhaps magnesium is a good plan, or an Epsom salt bath, because you can absorb magnesium very effectively through your skin. So Epsom salts are fantastic to improve the magnesium levels.
Brilliant. Well, David, our producer, has suggested a future episode on vitamins, so maybe we can explore this in more detail in the future. But sadly, our time is up for this week. So I hope to the many, many of you out there who experience fatigue, this has been of some help. We've not got any simple answers, but I hope we've got some long-term suggestions that might be helpful. And do look up our show notes for links to organizations. And do contact us if you've got experience of fatigue and any suggestions that we might want to include in a future episode. Anything you want to add as a final word, Kate?
No, I think we've covered it quite effectively. I think, I mean, to sum it up, there are lots of causes of fatigue. Some of them your GP can diagnose with a simple blood test. Some of them are more complicated. Go and ask.
Agreed. Yes, absolutely. Rule out the things that are easy to put right. Yeah. And then beyond that, listen to your body and be kind to yourself.
Yeah, be kind to yourself, I think, is the biggest message of all. And don't overwhelm yourself. Just, especially in the world that we're living in at the moment.
Yes, absolutely. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Kate. And thank you all for listening. And we'll catch up with you soon. Go well for now.
Go well.